The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
So this has, you know, become one of the best books of the year and one of the most successful books of the year. And that shows that the movement is alive and well. But they've done everything they could to try and take out my father, right? You and I have talked about this a million times, and you lived it. You personally lived it, because the same state that went after my father and me and our entire family, you know, went after you, and they went after you viciously. Why? Because you liked Donald Trump, because you believed in Donald Trump, because you believed in a constitution, because you believed in faith in society, because you believed in an American flag, because you believed in keeping America the number one country anywhere in the world, hands down, bar none, not losing that, not allowing the corruption, and having backbone where you'll actually confront these people and speak up to it. That's why they went after you like a dog. That's why they went after us like a dog. And it all started with us, first with the Russia hoax, and then it was the dirty dossier, and then it was impeachment number one and impeachment number two, and they went after Kavanaugh like he was an animal, and then they decided to deplatform us. I mean, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, they all canceled us. You know this better than anybody. And then it was the 91 indictments, and it was my 112 subpoenas. I became the most subpoenaed person in American history for doing absolutely nothing wrong. And then after that, it was, let's pull him off the ballot in Maine. Let's pull him off the ballot in Colorado, and let's raid Mar-a-Lago, and let's raid Melania's room, and let's raid Barron's room, and, you know, let's continue to go after his voice, and let's put his mugshot, you know, on T-shirts and try and embarrass him in front of the entire world. Let's make him take a mugshot. And then it was Fannie Willis and her boyfriend Nathan Wade, and then it was Letitia James, and then it's Alvin Bragg, and then it's, you know, Jack Smith, and, you know, planting classified folders at Mar-a-Lago. And where do you want me to stop? I mean, I could go on. I could spend the rest of the hour talking about how that, you know, they came after us viciously. And then when that didn't work, they tried to kill him in Butler, and when that didn't work, they tried to kill him at the golf course in Palm Beach. And, you know, when that didn't work, they killed Charlie Kirk because he had a powerful voice and he was amazing. And, you know, when that didn't work, they tried to lock up all of us. You know, they certainly wanted me in jail. They, you know, obviously everybody knows what they did to you on this show and everybody else in my father's inner circle. And then they tried to bankrupt my father. And then they tried to, you know, this is under siege.
What an incredible comeback. That's a great summary of everything that so many of you, we've witnessed this and we've seen it. We wrote about it in America Under Attack. He's out, Eric Trump, he's out promoting his new book, Under Siege, a runaway bestseller, by the way. And as he brings out, I mean, Americans are still upset over this. I mean, you can see why there's a faction of MAGA that feels like President Trump should come on even stronger going after the deep state. I mean, look at how they persecuted him. They did everything in their power to destroy Donald Trump and his family and those associated with him. And then they carried out an assassination on Charlie Kirk just a couple months ago. It's miraculous that despite all of that, President Trump was able to return to office in January. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream at the website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. Also, send us an email if you'd like to submit some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. He's plugging his book. I'll plug ours. We wrote about so much of what he just rattled off there. Of course, the more recent attacks and persecutions are perhaps left out here because of the time that we distributed this. I mean, I think the latest version of this came out in 2022. But we took you through all of it from the very beginning when he came down the escalator. And we also show you right from the start that Barack Obama's the one behind it all. I mean, even here recently, I don't know if I'll have time to get to the Epstein files and President Trump flip-flopping, and now he's coming around to saying, yeah, I want to release all the files. But these latest revelations from last week, all the emails and such, if anything, it exposes Obama, not Donald Trump. It's like it's backfiring on the Democrats. They want so badly for this to damage Trump And here, the more that's revealed, the more you learn about the deer leader. Isn't that amazing? It's like everywhere you look these past 9-10 months, you see the tables turning. But just going back to that summary that Eric Trump gave to you, in America Under Attack, again, that's this book right here. If you don't have a copy, make sure you call our operators today and request a free copy. Hardback version, more than 200 pages, fantastic book based on Bible prophecy. It says here, my father writes, after leaving office, Obama continued to pursue his goal. He spearheaded the effort to harm Donald Trump's Make America Great Again agenda, an effort that included illegally spying on him and impeaching him twice. He directed the radical left's treasonous battle to prevent Mr. Trump from being reelected at all costs. At all costs. We bring out here that he stole the election. He used the NSA and the CIA. He weaponized those agencies to go after all things Trump. It says here, these officials routinely covered up egregious lawbreaking by Clinton and other Democrats and did everything possible to find or even create scandal associated with Mr. Trump. It says, after Donald Trump surprised the entire political and media establishment by winning in 2016, radical leftists launched a treasonous plot to destroy him politically. They impeached him twice, spied on him, all those things that Eric Trump just said there. It says, Mr. Trump did not have a war or have to war to save Israel during his first term, referring to that prophecy in 2 Kings 14. My father said, you know, he certainly was persecuted during that first term, but he said the war that it talks about in 2 Kings 14 is about the war for him to return to office. And that, I mean, that war culminated in actual shots fired at Butler. Eight rounds. And then again at Palm Beach. In that case, they found the assassin before he was able to fire shots. I mean, Trump even explained to Steve Bannon this morning that, you know, 130 yards away, the Butler shooter, for those that know how to operate a rifle with a scope, I mean, that's like a little chip shot in golf. And we're very familiar with the head tilt. What would have, as I said yesterday, I mean, what would have happened to the United States had they taken him out on July 13th, last summer? We might already be in the Civil War. They tried to destroy him, even literally. And he came back. He came back against all the odds, like my father says in AUA. After all the terrible attacks on this man for the past many years, it's remarkable that he has the stamina and the determination and fight to keep doing battle for this country. He's a man ready for war. That's what we had at that trumpet cover, even before he came back. I mean, war in 24, you remember this. He had to be ready for war. And my father says, you need to watch Jeroboam. He is going to war his way back. We said that before he was actually elected. He is going to war his way back. God is going to do this. God is going to intervene. Listen again to Eric Trump from earlier today, clip 13.
He had just been convicted of 34 felony counts. We've had every one of them overturned, you know, since. So, you know, they've all been overturned. But he stands up. I'm right next to him. He turns around. He shakes my hand. And we walk out together, and we hop in the car, and we're going up the FDR Drive. Many people know the FDR Drive, which is kind of, you know, on the east side of Manhattan. It's a highway that takes you all the way north. And he looks at me. He goes, honey, I'm not sure how, but somehow we're going to win this whole thing. You know, and when he was talking about winning the whole thing, he was talking about, obviously, the court case on one hand, because it was just 34 felony counts, and on the other side, it was win the presidency. And I said, Pops, you know, it's either the White House or you and I are both in jail for doing absolutely nothing wrong. Like, that's how wide the pendulum was. It was either you were going to be at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue or we were going to be thrown in a jail for doing nothing wrong, all because they wanted him off that stage. Again, no different than they wanted Charlie off that stage, no different than they tried to kill my father to get us off the stage.
It's either the White House or we're going to be in prison for doing absolutely nothing. Well, it ended up being the White House, just as we had said from the beginning of the election steal back in 2020, all the way through the fake insurrection in 2021, all the way through to the war in 24 last year. And then Donald Trump returns to power. My father wrote this. This is from September of 2024, following the assassination attempt. It says, Trump is alive in spite of what one commentator called apocalyptic security failures. The Secret Service allowed this to happen. We will learn more as time goes on. But we know that many people in the intel community and in the federal agencies are desperate to keep Donald Trump from returning to power. I mean, that's true. We went through it yesterday. All these revelations by internet sleuths that find out about Thomas Crooks and how radical he was on the left wing, and how he was caught up in the radical transgender agenda as well. And it was covered up by Chris Wray and his lieutenants. Why the cover-up? Well, because there's a lot of powerful interests that did not want Donald Trump returning to power, even if it meant carrying out an assassination. I mean, we had some revelations yesterday with that New York Post story from Miranda Devine, but we still don't know the half of it regarding Crooks, who he was connected with. I mean, we know now that he was a radical leftist, even though Chris Wray wanted to cover that up. He did cover it up. So did the deputy director. You can watch yesterday's show if you want to go through that again. But my father says here, this is from AUA, we have said, or rather backing up, I don't care how much his enemies hate him, prophecy says Trump will return. That's from 2002. I'll just check the copyright. I think the last version we had was 2002, maybe 2023. We had one in both those years, I believe. But my father says here, no matter what his critics say or what those enemies are trying to carry out, Trump will return. We have said that from the very beginning of the 2020 election. If God says President Trump is going to recover something, then it will be recovered. Amos 7 also shows that war will be successful. And what could he recover if not the stolen election? This all must happen because of a miracle from God. We were telling you about miracles from God before the miracles actually happened. And I'm sure Under Siege is a pretty good book. He said on Bannon's show, he wrote it from the heart. He's not even a journalist or a writer by trade. But I'll tell you what should have been a runaway bestseller. I mean, it went out to tens of thousands, even as it is. And we've offered it freely for the last several years. Going back to the first version that came out in 2013. America Under Attack. I think there's quite a few influential people that have read the book, but it should be a runaway bestseller. It told you all that was going to happen before it happened. That's because it's based on Bible prophecy. It's based on the sure word of Bible prophecy. I made this point yesterday in class, just how many events and activities, actions that took place during Christ's ministry, during his life, that were all prophesied in advance. I mean, that in itself, it was like God trying to spotlight. Listen, these are the prophecies that point to the Son of God coming in the flesh. He's the anointed. It's going to happen in Bethlehem. It's going to happen at an appointed time. And yet, look at how easily mankind just dismisses the prophecies of God. Oh, it's not a big deal. We're not really interested in that. Solomon, I made this point some weeks ago. Solomon said of the making of many books, there's no end. There's no end. People will flock to books at bookstores that really have very little or no value whatsoever. And they overlook the most important book there is, the Holy Bible. and all of the prophecies of God, and God just laying things out there for us in advance. We are special just to be able to understand and know the truth. The truth, as Jesus said, the truth sets you free. I mentioned this either on Friday's show or maybe yesterday. But he came back. It was a miracle. And then, as my father has explained, it's also led to a temporary resurgence. And we are seeing that, particularly here at home in America. Play this from President Trump yesterday, clip four.
But in 9 months, we've lifted over 600,000 Americans off of food stamp, and that's a record. And it's stock cut because we really have a strong economy. I mean, we're building thousands and thousands of factories all over this country. Wait till they open up. You're going to see something like we've never seen before. You know, we lost our auto industry. 54% of our auto industry left for other places over the years. And I think we're going to get it more than all back. And in my first term, we had a great first term. The most successful economy we've ever had in my first term. This is going to blow it away. This is blowing it away, to be honest with you. It blows everything away. There's never been a time like this. And you're going to see the results, you know, pretty quickly.
Never been a time like this. I mean, again, I think they're pretty eager to congratulate themselves. And I'm sure there's a little bit of exaggeration here and there. But at the same time, I mean, when you just look at the numbers, what a difference. I mean, listen to this from Jesse Waters last night, clip five.
Since the start of the golden age, 2 million illegals have gone bye-bye. 1.5 million didn't even make home and work for it. They self-deported.
1.5 million. They self-deported. So you look at the Biden years, the auto pen years, the 10, 12 million that just came pouring across the border into the United States illegally. And now in a matter of 10 months, there's 2 million that have gone back. I mean, that is an obvious tables turning moment. It's happening fast. Completely opposite directions. The dear leader wanting to destroy, to blot out America, fundamentally transform America. And then Jeroboam, well, he came back to reverse it. God intervened to save America by the hand of Jeroboam. That's what 2 Corinthians or 2 Kings 14 says. It's amazing history, recent history, prophecy that we've lived through. Listen to this again from Jesse, clip six.
Now, the USS Gerald Ford, the world's largest aircraft carrier, has just arrived in the Caribbean. Now there are 15,000 sailors and Marines in the region. Look at that. Ready for anything. Venezuela is surrounded, and all options are on the table.
Is there anything you're ready to rule out at this point? Are you ruling out U.S. troops on the ground?
No, I don't rule out that. I don't rule out anything. We just have to take care of Venezuela.
No bad hombres safe. If you hurt us, we hurt you.
Would I launch strikes in Mexico to stop drugs? It's okay with me. I've been speaking to Mexico. They know how I stand. We know the addresses of every drug lord. We know their address. We know their front door.
We're shifting out of the Middle East. The new theater of operations is south of the border. The next couple weeks should be interesting.
That's right. And a lot of his supporters, President Trump's, they're cheering it on. Let's take it out of the Middle East, out of other theaters, and bring it closer to home and take out some of these drug lords and secure our border and to stop the flow of fentanyl into the United States. But then that said, I mean, you look at some of the policies, particularly in the Middle East, speaking of the Middle East, and it really is shocking to see men that are sincere, they've got good intentions, they are sure their policies are going to work. And yet we're just recycling the same old failures that have happened time and time again. Listen again to President Trump from yesterday, clip seven.
We have peace in the Middle East, and at the United Nations today, they approved the Board of Peace, which is I'm going to chair. And we're picking the leaders or the heads of the most important nations in the world. I think it'll be a board like no other. It was just endorsed by the United Nations. It was pretty great. It's a big thing. I think it's one of the most important things the United Nations will ever do, actually.
What's revealing in that soundbite is President Trump speaking so glowingly about the United Nations and this Board of Peace. Joel Hilliker wrote about it in the Morning Brief. He said the UN Security Council approved President Trump's Gaza peace plan yesterday. It says this green lights the creation of an international stabilization force, which is supposed to guard Gaza's borders, oversee Hamas's disarmament, and provide relief for the people of Gaza. It says the proposal has the support of Arab and Muslim nations, which secured a reference in the UN declaration to a path toward Palestinian statehood. So we're just going right back to the Oslo Accords. As I say, one failure after another. Hamas rejects it. It refuses to disarm. And then it says, and Israel's government scorns the two-state solution. Israel doesn't like it. Hamas isn't going to obey. And yet here we are talking about it as one of the most important things in the United Nations history. It's crazy, really, to think that this proposal that now has the endorsement of the UN, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. France and I forget the other nation that went to the UN and said, let's give the Palestinians a state. Never mind what Hamas did 2 years ago. Statehood is the answer. They had the state in Hamasistan, if you can call it that. And look at what they did. Look at what they carried out. Trump's Middle East plan once backed Israel. Now it paves the way for a Palestinian state. This is going to be a disaster for Israel. This is going to lead to the United States throwing its arms up in the air saying, forget it, we can't solve this problem. Let Germany take care of it. And then you come to a lot of other prophecies that are about to be fulfilled. The sure word of Bible prophecy. The U.S. decision to bring President Trump's 20-point plan, this is from Ynet News, to a vote at the UN Security Council signals a troubling shift for Israel and further evidence of diverging American and Israeli interests in shaping the future of the Middle East. And it talks about how so many of the things that have happened this past year, I mean, the Israelis embraced it. You know, pounding Iran, for example, decapitating Hezbollah with the U.S., you know, supporting it, obliterating Hamas. Well, they almost did that. And then the U.S. starts getting in there and saying, okay, that's enough, dial it back. We'll get a 20-point plan together that ensures that Hamas disarms. And now you see, already, as I said, not that long ago, Hamas was violating the terms of the 20-point plan instamatically. I mean, it was straight away. Hidden between the lines of this ambitious initiative lie two significant threats that the Israeli government has either ignored or overlooked in its eagerness to secure the return of the hostages. It talks about Turkey's growing influence in the Middle East and its hatred for Jews and for Israel. You've got Turkey becoming more prominent, more powerful. And then it says the second threat is the roadmap between or being presented at the UN Security Council for the establishment of a Palestinian state. This is not the first time the UN has taken up the question of Palestinian statehood. As I say, it happened earlier this year with other nations. And I mean, at that time, the U.S. was saying, no, this is too good of a deal for Hamas. And now you see the U.S. changing its tune. What is happening? It's the spirit of the age we're in. There's a lot of Jew hatred. There's a lot of prominent commentators that want the U.S. to sever all ties with Israel. Just let Israel take care of that area. Take care of itself. It says this time, it's the U.S. Let me just back up. It says, until now, most initiatives passed easily in the General Assembly, while the Security Council, with the power to adopt binding resolutions, was consistently blocked by U.S. vetoes, protecting Israel from anti-Israel or pro-Palestinian resolutions. That's the way it's generally been, okay? And this article brings out, but this time, it's the U.S. itself driving a resolution that lays the groundwork for a Palestinian state. The wording of the plan marks a stark departure from Trump's earlier declarations favoring voluntary migration, which had represented a break from the two-state paradigm. Let's forget about two-state solution. We talked about that all through the 90s. It never worked. We tried evacuating completely from Gaza, the Israelis did. That blew up in our face. They're still kidnapping soldiers, civilians. They raped and murdered Israelis or Jews on October 7. Having their own state, having their own strip didn't work. And about 2 seconds ago, the U.S. and its diplomats, its representatives seemed to understand that. But not now. Oh, no, we've got a vision for a Palestinian state, for Palestinian statehood. One would think that would be dead and buried on October 8th, 2023. You get your own state in the form of Gaza, and this is what you do to Israel? This is how you thank Israel? Israel pulls 10,000 Jews, every last Jew living in the Gaza Strip. Israel evacuated them, 2005. Look at the history. 10,000 Jews leave, and then what happens 18 years later? Well, and I'm not even bringing up all the skirmishes and kidnappings and things that happened in those 18 years in the middle. But 18 years later, the Palestinians just pour into southern Israel. Hamas fighters, you know, civilians, looters, thousands of them. And they murder, they rape, they loot, they burn, killed 1,200 Jews, took 250 of them hostage. The new plan not only omits any reference to migration, but actively encourages Gazans to remain and build a better Gaza. So we're not even sticking to plans that we put in place a few weeks ago, a couple months ago. And we're talking about eternal peace, and we've made peace in the region, so much so, hey, let's move all of the U.S. military into the Caribbean, because those are the threats we can confront now that we've got peace in the Middle East. How long is this going to last? It's pretty amazing. This other article, this is from Jewish News Syndicate. The vast majority of Israeli public, between 75 and 80% reject another Palestinian terror state, which this time would overlook the Ben Gurion airport. I mean, you give them the West Bank, anyone that's been over to Jerusalem knows that the drive to Ben Gurion, I mean, you've got the corridor that takes you to the airport in Tel Aviv, but the mountain ranges on both sides, that's the West Bank. That would be a future Palestinian state. And you arm that state, like Iran did with Gaza, with Hamas in Gaza, and they can train their sites, their missiles, right at Ben Gurion, right at this massive international airport. And Israelis don't want that. It says, in the hours leading up to the UN Council's unanimous vote, I mean, this just happened yesterday, Washington's 20-point plan for Gaza, experts told JNS that Israelis worry about the plan's pathway to Palestinian statehood. And this has Donald Trump's name all over it. It's his plan. He's heading up the Board of Peace in the Middle East. It says it's unfair to blame Netanyahu, who wants to maintain close ties with the U.S. president, to keep the possibility open to normalizing with Saudi Arabia, according to this Israeli representative, who said that Trump has been making enormous efforts to bring Riyadh into the Abraham Accords. We've just got to invite everyone in. Saudi Arabia. I mean, yesterday it was announced, too, that the U.S. was going to sell F-35s to Saudi Arabia. This is clip 8.
Are you planning to sell F-35s to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
I mean, and also, are you looking at doing a similar security agreement like you did with...
Yeah, no, I am planning on doing that. They want to buy. They've been a great ally. They've got to like us very much. Look at the Iran situation, what we did in terms of obliterating, you know, we obliterated their nuclear capability. Yeah, I will say that we will be doing that. We'll be selling F-35s. Yeah.
And doing this, as Mr. Hilliker brings out in the morning brief, I mean, it implies that the Trump administration doesn't see any possible problem with Saudi Arabia in the road ahead. No possibility. The only other Middle Eastern nation with F-35s is Israel. So Israel's about to lose its advantage in the region. And there's plenty of people in the Trump administration who are applauding that. Well, what's the big deal? I mean, Saudi Arabia is a big ally too. So is Qatar. I mean, they all are. You know what's been happening in recent months. Just bring everyone together. Nobody's ruled out. Nobody's ruled out that anyone can enter into the dialogue. And we can talk our way through this. I mean, when you put forward plans that the Security Council at the UN says, yeah, I like this plan put forward by the United States. It was a unanimous agreement there. Calls for Palestinian statehood. Israel was pleading beforehand. Take that clause out, please. And the U.S. didn't do it. From JNS, it says, Diker told JNS that the Trump administration is making a mistake by taking its plan to the UN, which he thinks it did at the urging of its Arab partners, who hope to use the global body as an international lever to isolate Israel and bring further pressure against it. I mean, that's always the aim. That's the goal. We've got to isolate Israel. We've got to divide Israel and the United States. And that gives us more power. It gives us more influence in the region. It makes Israel weaker, and this is what we want. Efforts to establish a Palestinian state won't work, and repeating calls for a two-state solution ignore the nature of the struggle that Israel faces, he said. It says Israel now finds itself with the Trump plan, which in point 19 calls for the redevelopment of Gaza, reform of the Palestinian Authority, and a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. That's point 19. And then this article says, how's that any different from the Oslo Accords? It's the same plan. And by the way, the second point on point 19, to reform the Palestinian Authority, how exactly are we going to reform? I've been talking a lot in class and on this show about the evil heart of man. I mean, when there's so much Jew hatred from the heart, how do you reform it? How do you change it? Well, there are some noticeable changes happening before us in the human hearts of individuals, but it seems to be going in the wrong direction. I mean, the hatred for Jews seems to be intensifying. How is this happening? Well, there is a real spirit world. And you see, I mean, it's like one of our news gatherers said this morning. I mean, you see attacks, particularly on Israel. I'm talking about biblical Israel, the United States, Britain, little Judah in particular. And they're just attacks coming from every direction. Look at the fight over the Epstein files. For a time there, you know, President Trump was calling it a hoax. Unbelievably. And then resisting efforts by MTG and others to release the files. And then flip-flopping. And now saying, hey, we need to put it all out there. He was asked, the president was. He was asked about this yesterday. Play clip 9.
Something you posted on Truth Social last night. You urged House Republicans to vote in favor of this Epstein release bill they're going to vote on tomorrow. I just want to be super clear on your position. Do you want to see that pass the Senate? Would you sign that bill if it gets to your desk?
I do want to say...
Some said that when he flip-flopped and said the House should pass it, that he was doing that, thinking that the Senate wouldn't. Here he indicates that he hopes the Senate does and that he would sign it. And he's saying, look, the ones that are, you know, the ones that were connected to Epstein are mostly Democrats. We weren't. And of course, that's MTG's point. There's nothing to hide if you're President Trump, so just put it out there. But you see, there's a lot of powerful people, Democrat and Republican donors, I'm sure, Hollywood celebrities, who would be drawn into this filth, or exposed anyway. This clip from Megyn Kelly's show, it's fairly long, but it gets, again, I mentioned earlier how, if anything, those emails, the batch of emails from last week, I mean, exposes how chummy the relationship was between Obama and Epstein, or Obama's people and Epstein. And this is what Megyn Kelly is talking about. It's kind of a strange story. I mean, even Steve Bannon was in there trying to reform Epstein's reputation or whatever, or getting him ready to, you know, hit the media circuit again. I don't understand all the details, but when you think about Ezekiel 8 and just looking into that hole in the wall and seeing all of these abominations, we've written on this before, and if I have time, I'll quote a little bit from it. But here's some excerpts from Megyn Kelly's podcast recently, clip 11.
Where are the remaining 98 hours of Epstein tapes? Wolf says he has 100 or so, maybe more. In that tape, he says, I have 100 of hours of him talking about Trump. So maybe he has even more of him just talking, period. 1 hour and 44 minutes were provided to the Daily Beast. A few minutes, if that, was played on Wolf's podcast. So what gives? Where's the rest of it? Well, we at the Megyn Kelly Show can confirm that more tapes do indeed exist. We know because my team and I have heard some of them. The tapes have not been made public because we have been told they are part of an unknown, unreleased project. Who's doing the project? Who now owns the tapes? I don't know. We do not have a copy of them, nor do we know the plans for them. But we do recall some of what we heard on them. We heard a conversation from April 2019, which is 5 months after Julie K. Brown's explosive reporting on Epstein that really led to the end for him. On the tape that we heard, four power brokers are in a room. They are brainstorming public relations strategies. The goal? To try to rehabilitate Epstein's image. Epstein's there. Steve Bannon is there. Obviously a major player on the right. Michael Wolff is also there. But he is not just a journalistic observer. He is an active participant, providing Epstein with his own PR advice. But I want to go back to what we heard and the room with Epstein, Wolf, Bannon, and one other person, a woman. We can at this time exclusively reveal that the fourth party in that room, never before publicly identified, was former Obama White House counsel, Catherine Rumler. Ms. Rumler is all over the emails that just hit yesterday, which show a very friendly relationship between her and Jeffrey Epstein. She reportedly even showed up to Epstein's 2019 sex trafficking arraignment. In Wolf's 2021 book, all right, now try to keep it straight because we're going to tell you about a meeting that was from April 2019. Jeffrey Epstein allegedly killed himself in August of 2019, 1 month after he'd been charged with all these crimes. And then in 2021, after the meeting that we're discussing with you right now, he wrote another book called Too Famous. And in that book, he revealed parts of this conversation I'm telling you about right now. But interestingly, he holds a few things back. He does not reveal, for example, this attorney's identity. In the audio we heard, she's referred to as White House counsel and Kathy, so it's pretty clear to us who it is. Now that we see her all over the email correspondence, even more so. We reached out to Ms. Rumler on our reporting that she was in this meeting with Epstein, and she declined to comment. The tenor of the conversation is friendly and upbeat. It sounds like friends having a good time, laughing and joking as they try to come up with ways to spin a known sex abuser back into the good graces of the public. Bannon says Epstein does not have a legal strategy problem, but that his PR problems are metastasizing. Bannon suggests a year of media training so Epstein could do an interview on a program like 60 Minutes And both Bannon and Rumler expressed regret that Charlie Rose, who was brought down by a sexual harassment scandal of his own in 2017, was no longer available to do an interview on his show. Yes, he would have been a friendly. They were not wrong about that. Wolf documented some of this conversation I'm telling you about, though notably not all, in that book I mentioned called Too Famous, which hit in 2021, revealing that Rumler chimed in, he doesn't name her, that she did not want Epstein videotaped in preparation for any interview with a 60 Minutes or whomever, because it could be subject to a subpoena. Rumler ultimately relents and allows Epstein to sit for a practice interview so long as they don't talk about his legal issues.
So there you go. I'm not going to pretend to understand all the nuances of this revelation, this story. I mean, you can go and watch Megyn Kelly's podcast for more detail. Steve Bannon's there. He's producing a movie on Epstein, and judging by the trailer, I don't think it's just this big puff piece necessarily. But why is he there? I mean, isn't this, and then you have the Obama Council, and then you have this other author, Michael Wolff, he's a Trump hater. And then for a time, you've got a lot of Trump people trying to cover up, even people like Kash Patel who are in the FBI. I mean, it's like, well, in one instance or interview, yeah, everything's got to be released. And then you get in power and you start changing your tune. But coming back to the spirit of the age of sit down and talk to anyone. What do they say? That Epstein needed to be rehabilitated, his reputation? He's a sex offender. And all these other charges are about to come on to him in 2019. And they're trying to reform his reputation? They're trying to bring him back into the public eye and turn him into a good guy? What is going on here? Isn't that what we're supposed to do, though? Judging by the new rules of journalism or investigative journalism? Yeah, just talk to anybody and then let the public decide. We had an article at the Trumpet. It says, America is morally and spiritually sick. Epstein is a symptom of far more widespread sexual sins in America. See, even a lot of Americans just turn a blind eye to this because we're all engaged in gross immorality. And the Bible says so. And people know that that's the case. Who have our elites become? Who have we ourselves become? How deep does the perversion in America go? This was from earlier this year. Most Americans have already accepted a panorama of sexual sins. That's why it takes a demonic sexual monster like Jeffrey Epstein to emerge before they get upset. Yeah, pedophilia and children abused. But hey, let's give him some media training. Let's reform his reputation. It says here, the fact remains that Republicans and Democrats alike are guilty of transforming America into a perverted society. The Epstein files should be a politically nonpartisan issue. They should provoke a call to national repentance. And then it goes on and talks about how that God sees this and he's just sickened by it. It's sick. And that's the way Isaiah the prophet describes our society in Isaiah 1. A sickness that goes from head to toe. It says here, it would have been far easier for America to repent back in the 1950s when fornication was the front line of the sexual revolution. It'll be harder now that the nation has gone far past fornication into homosexuality and other sexual perversions. I mean, transgenders are turning into assassins as well. And it's all just tightly woven together. It's just part of our society. The furries, the transgenders, homosexual marriage, fornication. I mean, that's so 1950s. What does the Bible say? What did Jesus say? What did Jesus teach? You could go into the Gospels and get to a pretty corrective study right away. From God himself, God in the flesh, But people don't want to live by God's standards. They want to live rebellious lives, lawless lives. And you see it, as I say, the attacks, the lawlessness. It's coming from every direction, every direction. Satan's war, he's the god of this world. We've been pointing that out repeatedly. He's deceived the whole world. And his war against this world and against the nations of Israel in particular, I mean, it takes on many different forms. It's not just all having to do with military and bombs and bullets. I mean, that's a big part of it. But you have the war of drugs. Look at the drug cartels. Look at the fentanyl that's just pouring into the country. And then U.S. military forces showing up in the Caribbean, of all places, just to try to push back. Look at the war of sex sins, the prevalence of pornography. I mean, it's all over the place. Look at the war against the family, against fatherhood, against marriage. Look at the war coming at us from the entertainment industry, from media, the war against the Bible, the war against the sure word of Bible prophecy. Anything to discredit, to attack, to malign the truth of the scriptures. Look at the war against our biblical identity. Satan just wanting to blot that out. I mean, Satan wanted to blot out our nations. Look at the war against America, Britain, pretty much all Western nations, just with respect to, you know, physical things like health, health care, education, literacy. The attacks come from every direction and from every aspect. The goal is the same. Satan is trying to destroy our nations, and he's having good success. Now, God intervened to blot out his effort to blot out Israel. But still, you look around and you see so many sins. I was hoping I could get to this clip because when you first listen to it, I mean, you can't help but to chuckle because, you know, President Trump is funny. But still, you know, it's glorifying and promoting junk food. That's what it amounts to. And again, we've all had weaknesses in these areas, particularly in America. But I think those that know anything about President Trump, they know he has a fondness for McDonald's, and he worked at McDonald's for 30 minutes, as he mentioned yesterday at this, it's some kind of a McDonald's summit. This is clip one.
And I'm honored to stand before you as the very first former McDonald's fry cook ever to become president of the United States. And I actually was there for about 30 minutes, and that was 30 minutes longer than Kamala was there, right? Despite her job at McDonald's, that didn't work out too well. Nobody knew in the line. The line was a long line. They had 25,000 people, so somebody let them know we were coming. It was toward the end of the campaign. And after I did the French fries and did some other things, I then stood at the window. And the people would drive up, a little bored, in all fairness. You know, it is, I mean, they're waiting for a hamburger, okay? So they'd drive up like this. They'd look over, whoa, every one of them. And it was fascinating. Every one of them, they would, it was, the response was incredible. Almost like I knew I was going to win when I saw that. But as you may have heard, I'm also one of your all-time most loyal customers. I really am. Well, I think that's good. I'm pretty sure that's good. While other politicians fly around on campaign planes stocked with expensive catering, on Trump Force One, prior to ascending to Air Force One, which is quite a nice plane also, we served only McDonald's almost every time. On occasion, we couldn't find one, which is pretty hard to believe. We'd go another route, but we really did. You fed us very well, and I even got Bobby Kennedy to eat a Big Mac. And he told me he loved it.
So there you go. Rerouting the Air Force One travel schedule in order to find a McDonald's. McDonald's is McDonald's. Don't get me on a rant. about McDonald's. But to make a more serious point here, coming back to Jesus, what he taught, you know, the Gospels, even the instruction that God gives to us regarding, you know, the laws of health. I'll just read this. I read it in class the other day, but it's, again, talking about prophecy being fulfilled. The gospel writer Matthew, he's referring to Isaiah 9, verses 1 and 2, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah. It says in verse 16 of Matthew 4, "The people which sat in darkness saw great light, and to them which sat in the region in the shadow of death, light is sprung up." I mean, Jesus came in as a light to this world. And men just love darkness. We love to do what we want to do. We love to satisfy those carnal impulses that really take away from better health, whether you look at it spiritually or physically. This was from the other day, from Maria's show, talking about President Trump's desire to try to lower the prices for these so-called miracle drugs that cause you to lose weight dramatically and in an unhealthy manner, by the way. But this is clip two.
Meanwhile, President Trump continues his work. He's, of course, traveling the world, doing all these deals with countries across the world. And yesterday in the Oval Office, striking a deal with Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk to cut the price of weight loss drugs. Watch this.
Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk are committing to offer Zepbound and Wegovy at most favored nations rates for American patients. This will slash the cost of Wegovy from $1,350 a month to ultimately $250 a month. Just as significantly, Medicare and Medicaid will finally cover the cost of these weight loss drugs for millions of patients suffering from obesity. Copays for Medicare patients will be as low as $50. This is tremendous savings.
Congressman, your reaction?
Well, as an ER doc, I'm glad to see that America is taking fitness very seriously. But remember that it's not just a drug that's going to make you healthy. It's not going to increase your cardiovascular health. It's going to make you maybe skinny, but you're going to lose muscle weight, too. We got to do this the old-fashioned way and get out there and put some miles in, actually get to the gym, increase your bone density. This is not magic.
And so many of those weight loss drugs are exactly that. They're sold, or they're advertised as magical. You don't have to change anything. You don't need to go old school. I mean, some good advice there from the doctor there at the end of that segment. During the government shutdown, you may have seen all of the headlines that the food stamp program was getting. You're gonna cut off 41 million people, and they're gonna starve. This was an article that was written at that time, at the peak of the government shutdown crisis. It says, while SNAP combats food insecurity in some cases, data also reveals a troubling trend about what gets purchased. Junk food. Junk food. A lot of people on food stamps, they just go and buy junk food. It says it was launched in 1964 by President Lyndon Johnson. And I'm sure they had all of these sincere objectives. Like, we want to help people's health. We want to make sure that people don't starve. We've got to give them some help when they go to the grocery market. Part of the rationale behind SNAP is that, according to the USDA, 13% of American households are affected by serious hunger. But that too clashes with the details of the nation's obesity crisis. Around 1 in 3 adults are obese, and it's higher for the lowest income. The lower the income, the fatter we are. What's going on? And is the government helping? Is promoting drugs and fast food, is that going to help the problem? We're in the midst of an obesity crisis, it says. It says this feeds directly into America's metastasizing public health emergency, obesity-fueled chronic diseases that are bankrupting the healthcare system. So here you have the healthcare system and its part. Average family health insurance premiums have also been climbing quickly and are now around $27,000 annually. Well, we got to have the fast food, and then we've got to have the weight loss drug, and well, then we've got to have the health care, and we've got to pay $27,000 a year for that. Satan is attacking Israelite nations from every direction. He's making us sicker morally, physically, spiritually. It's all by design. I mean, America Under Attack focuses in on, you know, the dear leader's attack on those fundamental institutions of the United States. But the attacks, looking at it more broadly, the attacks coming from the devil, they come in many different forms. That's why we need the light of Jesus Christ to light up our lives. That's why we need the light of Bible prophecy. We need the light of God's law. We need the light of God's truth. As I said yesterday, it's the truth of God that sets us free. I've taken you 2 minutes over, but I'm not going to charge you for either of those minutes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.